You're a wizard, Abby! Potter Book Club for The Goblet of Fire with
Michael DeMauro,
Sarah Tompkins,
and I'm Majaya Shrestha. This week, we talk about the return of Padfoot. We learn about the Great Lake and the Mer people from Michael, and the battle for the Tri-Quizzer Tournament continues. Round two.
Well, hey, y'all. Welcome back to the Tri-Quizzer Tournament. This time we got a score roundup of Bajaya at 18, Sarah at 17, and Michael at 12. And just a heads up, Bajaya's first question is going to come from the Yule Ball category, the same one they ended on last week.
All right, let's go with 500. Same category, Alex.
All right. I like this. Do I have to be snide?
And yes.
Yes. Like
Alex? You have to 100% be pretentious and pretend
you're doing a
all
good job.
The answers. It's great. Thanks, Michael.
And the
yeah.
Okay. Who did Neville Longbottom take to the Yule Ball?
Me.
I think it was you.
Jenny.
I love Weasley. You guys helping me with this. This is fantastic.
Ginny Weasley. It was.
Hey.
I knew that one.
What I should have asked
is to...
Can
I get a bonus half points?
No. That's a Sarah half point rule.
I knew it in my head, so I yes. asked.
We should ask Sarah if she knows how half points work right now.
Do you know how half points work in this Quizzitch tournament situation?
When Sarah feels the answer is right in her heart.
All right. Okay.
Spells and curses for 200.
I can't believe you're really just 600 right down there.
I want to do spells.
Okay, 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 okay.
For 200?
Yeah.
Okay. What is the disarming spell?
Ding, ding, ding.
Shit!
Michael!
Spelliarmus.
Yep.
Harry spell.
Stupid Harry.
Also, Michael was Harry.
I was Harry.
So he's stupid.
They made me be.
Oh, yeah. You really hated being a
chosen
one. I hated
it so much.
I hated a chosen one.
Chapter 27. Padfoot returns. Who's Padfoot? I don't know.
I don't know. Is he sexy?
It's very
yes.
mysterious.
Ooh.
So Ron was taken into the lake with Harry, right? So he's like so excited. Ron is so excited. Then he finally gets to share in the attention with Harry, which Harry's like kind of keeps quiet about this. He kind of lets Ron have the attention. But Ron's version keeps changing. So it started off with what actually happened to him, and it goes from that to him struggling single-handedly, like fighting 50 more people, blah, blah, blah. So Padma, his date to the Yule Ball, is more interested in him now. She was kind of mad at him for how everything went down, but she's like, tell me more. Hermione's getting teased about being Crumb's special someone. Yeah, so it's March now, and it means cold winds, and that keep blowing owls off course, and so it delays the reply mail from Sirius, which they finally get. Sirius wants them to meet him at the edge of Hogsmeade, but he wants them to bring tons of food. So it's 2 p.m. on Saturday. He wants them to meet at the edge, like where the road going out of Hogsmeade ends. So Harry's like really worried about Sirius being back at Hogsmeade, but he's like, but I really want to see him. And that puts him in a really good mood about going to Double Potions. So they're going down to the dungeons, and the Slytherins are all huddled around looking at Witch Weekly, which they throw at Hermione. And the article they're reading is titled Harry Potter's Secret Heartache. So it's obviously by Rita Skeeter. I know.
Rita Skeeter.
Rita Skeeter. It's an article talking about how Harry had finally found love in Hermione, and
Now she had snubbed him for another famous wizard, Krom, because she is very plain, but she is very ambitious.
Why would Hermione do this to poor Harry?
God, well,
Hermione,
she's plain, but she's ambitious. She wants to climb that social ladder, you know? Who doesn't?
Okay.
Yeah, so the article also mentions that Krom invited Hermione to visit him in Bulgaria over the summer, and that he had never felt that way about any other girl before.
That's pretty cute.
I know. Pansy's in the article being like, Hermione probably used the love potion because she couldn't get anyone any other way. So Ron is like, I told you so.
Jealous.
Right? She probably is because everybody expected Krom to be like a huge Slytherin person, but he's not. So Ron is like, I told you so about Rita Skeeter. And Hermione's not that worried about it. About being branded the Scarlet Letter is what Ron calls it.
He has like familiarity with Muggle literature from like many moons ago, many, many years ago.
Well, he says that that's what, not that he has read the book. He says that that's what his mom calls.
Oh, a Scarlet calls Woman, it. That's right.
Yeah, a Scarlet Woman. Sorry, it has said a Scarlet Letter.
But still.
So Hermione isn't worried, but she does wonder out loud, like how did Rita know about the invitation? And because he had said that to her right after he pulled her out of the lake. And Rita Skeeter isn't allowed on the grounds anymore. And Ron is like, but what did you say? What did you say back? And Hermione was like, I was too busy worrying about you and Ron getting out of the lake, so I didn't say anything back yet. So Snape says, 10 points from Gryffindor for talking in class, and another 10 points for reading magazines.
Boo.
And then he starts reading the magazine out loud. Or the article out loud.
That's embarrassing.
Jesus. So he's like, you all are talking too much. So splits the three of them. Harry is moved up front. Hermione has to go sit by Pansy. And Ron, like, goes sit somewhere else. And Snape is just kind of, like, whispering to Harry, or talking to him in low tones, being like, I don't care, you're famous. You better not break into my office again, because that gillyweed and the boomslang skin have been missing, and they are only in his private stores. So he's just like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But he knows that Hermione took boomslang skin. That's really hard to say. Their second year, and Dobby
took
gillyweed.
He's still hung up on the boomslang. That's really hard.
See, it's hard.
It's been like two books, Snape. Get over it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's almost like he still thinks it's a recent thing that happened. I don't know.
It's like really he weird. Almost holds on to every single grudge he's ever had.
I know. So Snape is like, I know you were out of bed the other night and you, Mad-Eye Moody covered up for you, but that won't happen again. And Harry says something smart back to him, and Snape is like, oh yeah, you know what Veritaserum is? I'll give that to you and you will spill everything. And Harry has like instant flashback about him talking about Cho Chang and Sirius and everything. He's like, no! So they're still in the class, and Karkaroff interrupts it, and he demands to talk to Snape privately, and Snape's like, not right now. And so Karkaroff just like hangs out until the class is over, because he's like, he says that Snape has been avoiding him. So class is over. Right before class is over, like, Harry pretends to, like, knocks over something. And he has to clean it
up. Casual knockover.
Yeah. He's hanging around, like, listening to Karkaroff. And he sees that Karkaroff shows Snape something on the left inner forearm and says, it's never been this clear. And Snape is like, put it away. And then
we can talk about it later.
Yeah. Give me some of that potion. Then he swats Harry, and Harry, like, clears off. So they go off to Hogsmeade, and they have all this food for Sirius. They go to all the other shops before it's the time to meet him. They are greeted by a very large black shaggy dog, and who trots up the mountain to a cave where Buckbeak is also tethered, and they all bow, and he bows back. And Sirius is super dirty and thin again, and he just fucking goes to town on the food. He says he's been living off of rats, mostly. Because he can't really steal too much food from the village. Which, like, Buckbeak is a huge hippogriff. Like, how was he feeding Buckbeak? You know? I don't know.
Good question. Rats, I guess.
How many rats does it take to feed Buckbeak? The whole village is like, that's weird. We're strangely out of rats right now.
I guess Hagrid fed him ferrets, right? Like,
yeah. Must
really be into rodents.
Maybe. So he thinks things are fishier, and he's not the only one that's worried. When he hears that Crouch sacked Winky, he gets even more worried. And then they also tell him that Winky was in the top box and Crouch wasn't there. So he suspects that someone in the top box stole Harry's wand, and Harry tells him about Bagman offering him help with the Triwizard Tournament, and Sirius like, that's really weird. And Hermione also says, remember, he was in the woods during the riots, and then he disapparated. I mean, he literally could have disapparated to go anywhere. At that time, they just thought that he went to help the rest of the ministry, right? So he asks more, Sirius asks more questions about Crouch, what Crouch did after Winky was found. And he says, if you want to get a man's measure, take a look at how he treats his inferiors, not his equals. Which is really ironic when it comes to what Sirius does in book 5.
I feel like that's the modern equivalent of people being like, check out how someone tweets. Check out if somebody tweets really nasty stuff. Do not date them. No, how somebody treats like the wait staff. I feel like that's always the rule of thumb is like, see how somebody treats your waiter.
Yeah. So Sirius is really puzzled and worried about Crouch's actions and the way he's been acting. So because he goes into this whole story about how Crouch is the one that sent Sirius to Azkaban without a trial. He didn't even get a trial. So he used to be the head of the Department of Magical... Yeah, it's very fucked up.
Yes, messed
up. Magical law enforcement. And he was even tipped to be the next minister. So he hated dark wizards and rose to the ministry very quickly and started just ordering harsh measures, including like giving Aurors powers to kill instead of capture. He fought violence against violence and authorized the use of the unforgivable curses against Voldemort supporters.
Unforgivable cusses.
Unforgivable curses. The way he's doing all this, it reminded me of McCarthy. But so after Voldemort disappeared, he was definitely gonna be the next minister, right? But then guess what happened?
What?
His own son got caught with a group of Death Eaters who were trying to go find Voldemort and return him to power.
Ain't that the way it goes?
I know. So Sirius isn't 100% sure about whether like his son was really a Death Eater or was he just at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Or is he the doctor? I don't know.
Is he the doctor? He's just time traveling. So Crouch at least gave his son a trial and then sent him to Azkaban. Sirius saw the Dementors bring him in. He was like no more than 19 years old. He died a year after they brought him in. And
yikes, that's so young.
I know. Sirius says most go mad and stop eating after a while and they just die. So Crouch, it is because of Crouch's position, him and his wife were allowed a deathbed visit. And his wife even died shortly after. So he went from having everything to having nothing. So his professional life went away because people are like, oh, he should have spent some time with his son instead of spending all that time at the ministry, like kind of blaming Crouch for his son's alleged doings. That's and obviously great. He lost all of his family. So Harry also mentions that Moody said Crouch is obsessed with catching dark wizards, and Ron mentions how he was in Snape's office in the middle of the night, and Sirius is like, I don't think that's connected, but I mean,
what is?
So he's like, he probably wanted to investigate Snape. He would come to the tournaments instead of snooping through Snape's office. Like, what would be a better way to keep an eye on Snape, Crouch wanting to keep an eye on Snape, than coming to the tournament events and hanging out at the castle itself? So Ron is like still not convinced Snape isn't a Death Eater, and Sirius is like, well, he definitely was in the group of Slytherins who turned out to be Death Eaters. And then Harry mentions Karkaroff's concerns. Sirius is like, I don't know what to do about that. But he says, you know, Dumbledore still trusts Snape, and that one carries some weight. Moody just suspects everyone, but he has never killed anyone if he could help it. Crouch is very different.
If he could help it.
He would usually...
Sometimes you can't help it.
Yeah, he would usually capture and bring him in. So he asks Ron if you could ask Percy about Crouch and Bertha Jorkins, who, because remember,
she went missing.
Ludo Bagman said they're finally looking into it. And Sirius remembers Bertha from school and remembers her as being a bit dim, but had an excellent memory for gossip, which used to get her into a lot of trouble and could be a liability for the ministry. So then it's time to go back to school, and Sirius warns Harry. He's like, don't come back to visit me. Okay?
Wink,
and that's
wink.
The end of the chapter.
Hooray! Or boo! Or aww.
One of those things.
One of those things.
So, new things are, what's that thing on Karkaroff's arm?
Eczema.
All the stuff about Crouch and his family, his son and his wife dying, and his fall of his career, and Rosier, Wilkes, Lestrange's, Avery. Those are some of the Death Eaters Snape used to hang out with.
That would be an interesting thing to ask someone about.
Yeah.
Death Eaters.
I have two questions. Like, I understand that the Death Eaters were going nuts and Dark Art, just Voldemort was going nuts, but imprisoning someone without a trial? Like, come on. Even terrorists here get trials.
Right. That's some messed up.
But
messed up stuff right there.
At the same time, there are plenty of people that don't want to give them trials here. So I guess two coins.
There's that.
But I mean, I guess I don't know how the legal system in wizarding culture works. But man, that's rough not to give somebody due process.
Yeah, especially because Sirius had saying that he was innocent until proven guilty. He had just gone through two of his friends dying. That's a lot of emotional stress and everything. Mm-hmm. At least let him say his piece and defend himself.
Seriously.
Yeah. The second question was, what would people, think if they saw, three kids going off into a cave with a big dog that they have never seen before?
That they're about to have a freaking great time. Partay.
A hoot of a time.
I don't know. Some weird, I would say, orgy or Dungeons and Dragons party.
They even said, in the chapter, they said that the mountain they climbed up was really steep and, scary to traverse at certain points. But because they were it's easy for Sirius because he has four paws. But they had, clamber up a mountain and stuff.
I don't know. I go hiking. I have gone hiking many a time with my two friends and their black dog. So must have looked a lot like that.
But I mean, at least these are Hogwarts students.
That's
people
true.
Know that they don't have a pet.
That's
especially,
true.
Especially they know they have familiars, but they don't have pets. Especially a dog.
That's true.
So that was
Should have given Sirius the invisibility cloak.
Yep, that was a chapter.
But it all worked out.
Thank goodness it worked out.
Yeah, that was a chapter. Unless you all have any other questions.
No, I don't think so.
That was
such a good recap.
So thorough.
Thanks. I mean, what do you expect from me?
I know. You're perfect.
A lot less. I'm really surprised.
Hey.
Thanks, Vijaya.
Thanks.
Thank you. Hey, dudes. Do you know what I like to talk about? I like to talk about the Great Lake and merfolk.
I
think you mean the Great Lakes.
Superior.
In America.
Huron.
Michigan.
No.
Erie. Michigan. Ontario.
Huron.
I'm on Lake Ontario. If you want to find me, that's where I am right now.
It's polluted by all of Michael's poops.
Yes.
That's true. Sometimes I have to close down beaches.
Because of my poops.
Because of Michael's poops.
So I did some research on the Great Lake and found out some fascinating things.
Oh, I'm sure.
Did you know that the grounds of Hogwarts function partly as a nature preserve for magical creatures?
That's so nice.
That's pretty cool.
Right, because these things can't exist in Muggle-inhabited areas. You can't have a Grindylow swimming around, right? They gotta have some place to go.
It's true, but they have to be native to somewhere. I guess animals in nature preserves are also native to somewhere, so please ignore that statement.
Right. So, you know, the Great Lake has Grindylows, merpeople of a hardy Scottish strain.
Ooh.
I don't know what that means.
Oi.
And a semi-domesticated giant squid.
No.
What do they mean, semi-domesticated? Like, does he sometimes sit when you ask him to?
Well, you know, like, if a creevy falls into the lake, he'll pop them back out, and he lets kids tickle his tentacles on sunny days and stuff.
So doesn't sound good.
Do most giant squids not do that?
I guess not. So, when my friend Joe, wrote this book...
That's Joe.
At that point, only giant squids had only been found, like, washed up.
Really?
On shore. Yeah. It was 2006 was the first time a living giant squid was caught on film.
I did not know that. That is amazing.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? So she suspects they have some magical powers, is what it said on Pottermore.
Is the Great Lake big enough for the giant squid, though?
I guess so.
It seems like it's pretty. How big do giant squids get?
I think pretty big.
Giant? Isn't the giant squid discussion, okay? Like, I didn't research that.
Cephalopodcast?
Ah, see what you did there.
I don't get it. So originally in the Chamber of Secrets, she was going to have Harry and Ron crash into the lake in Mr. Weasley's Ford Anglia. And meet the merpeople at that time. But she thought it was, like, too convoluted and distracting and stuff. But, like, at the time, she had this vague notion that the lake might lead to other places and that the merpeople might play a larger role later on. So she thought it was, like, a good idea to introduce them. But she ended up going with the Whomping Willow instead.
I think that's a better choice.
Nice.
Yeah. So the Great Lake is really a Scottish loch, apparently. Freshwater and landlocked. And she never...
Landlocked.
And she never really went into the whole portal thing, but the appearance of the Durmstrang ship from its depths in the Goblet of Fire hints that if you're traveling by enchanted craft, you might be able to take a magical shortcut to other waterways.
Didn't you say it was a pipe?
What's that?
Didn't you say it was a pipe? You thought it was a pipe?
Maybe. I thought it was a pipe? That sounds like something stupid I would say.
I can't remember.
I think also you meant Durmstrang.
Yeah, that's what I said. Durmstrang. Exactly. So in the world of Harry Potter, merpeople are half. So I'm going to tell you. That's all I got on the Great Lake. So now I'm going to do some. Now I'm going to talk about some merpeeps.
Can I tell you something quickly about giant squids?
I would love it if you would.
The females are bigger than the males. Females are a maximum of 43 feet, and males are a maximum of 33 feet. That is actually giant.
Yeah.
Like, and I realize that their tentacles take up a big part of that, but that's not going to be a small thing when you see
it. No, that'd be terrifying.
That's crazy. Like, the mantle, which is like the head part, is 6.6 feet long for a female. That's big. That's bigger than me.
That's so big. Okay.
Sorry. Anyway, continue about the merpeople. I just wanted to share that about giant squids because that's crazy.
That would be terrifying.
In D&D, can you imagine swimming behind that or up near that?
Not at all.
In D&D, like what?
They're called merfolk, not merpeople. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Nobody cares about D&D.
No one. In the world of Harry Potter, they are half fish, half human, gray skin, dark green hair, and they have yellow eyes and teeth. They also have warlike tendencies and can drag people to their deaths underwater. That is, like, pretty much...
That sounds terrible.
...the entirety of the information that was available to me on Pottermore, which is why I delved into the world of Wikipedia and found out...
Tell me more.
...more exciting things about merpeople.
Merfolk.
All right. So there's articles on lots of different things. Mermen were traditionally depicted as, like, unattractive and kind of mean and gross, whereas the mermaids were sometimes sexy. They were sexy, but they were also dangerous.
Oh, like sirens?
Yes, actually, that is specifically called out, that they feel like sirens influenced their kind of look of their half human, and they would get sailors to do dumb shit.
In fairness, it probably doesn't take that much.
Yeah, probably not.
It's true.
So yeah, like there's myrrh shit in like every mythology, not every mythology, but in many, many, many mythologies. So they're in Greek mythology, in medieval Europe. There are like, they would often like blame mermen for causing violent storms and sinking ships. Let's see, like they had in Finnish and Amazon river regions, and like Chinese mermen were believed to only surface during storms.
That's super cool though. I like the idea of like, I mean, it makes sense if you think about it in a way, like the idea that there wouldn't, if your whole world, I mean, obviously we thought for the majority of humans being humans, we thought that the earth was the center of the universe. But like, if you think that people are sort of the center of the universe, it makes sense to think that they would be, there'd be people or people like creatures in the water as well. Especially if you want to blame your bad luck on things.
Absolutely. Which sailors often do. So I guess first stories appeared in ancient Assyria, in which the goddess Atargatis transformed herself into a mermaid out of shame for accidentally killing her human lover.
Shame. Oh, I like this story. It sounds real saucy.
Shame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's all I got, though.
Well, I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, you can go do that in your own time. So they've been throughout history. They've been in like many, many cultures. There's lots of historical accounts of mermaids. Like Christopher Columbus reported seeing them during his exploration of the Caribbean.
They real sexy.
Yeah, he reported seeing three female forms which rose high out of the sea, but were not as beautiful as they are represented. Because that's what
he seemed like a real. He seemed into. Like a real piece of work, though.
Yeah.
Did you come across the Fiji mermaid in your search?
Is that the one that
PG
was
PG Barnum had?
In the
Oh man, that's a good one. That one's messed up.
Yeah, there's lots of hoaxes where like people would stick monkeys and fish together and stuff to try to pretend like they're real mer folk. The logbook of Blackbeard recorded that he instructed his crew on several voyages to steer away from charted waters, which he called enchanted for fear of mer folk or mermaids.
He also kept lit fuses in his beard. So.
Yeah.
All right, that's a thing.
Apparently in 2009, dozens of people reported seeing a mermaid leaping out of Hafta Bay waters doing aerial tricks. And the Israeli coastal town of, oh my God, I'm so sorry, people, Kiryat Yam offered a $1 million reward for proof of its existence. In February of 2012, work on two reservoirs in Zimbabwe stopped when workers refused to continue, stating that mermaids had hounded them away from the sites.
Damn.
I'm gonna tell my boss tomorrow that my mermaids hounded me away from my email.
That's a good plan.
I mean, it seems legitimate.
Yeah. So yeah, so there's just tons and tons of that stuff. There's actually then I went down this whole other hole, which is pretty terrifying. There's something called Sirenomelia, which is essentially mermaid syndrome.
Is that people who think they're mermaids?
No, it is a rare congenital disorder in which a child is born with his legs fused together.
That's really sad.
Yeah. And there's like really gross pictures of like fetuses in jars and stuff. It's about as rare as conjoined twins. So pretty much one out of every 100,000 live births have this. And so that's like not that rare, you know?
That's less rare than I wanted you to say.
Yeah.
I was thinking 100 million, but 100,000.
No, 100,000. Yeah. It's usually fatal within a day or two of birth.
Aww, that's so sad.
Because of kidney and bladder complications. But there are survivors, and there's like four survivors known as of July 2003.
Aww.
There's apparently a woman in Peru right now who's has this and is still alive. And she was born in some she was born in some poor region, and I think they took her to Lima, and like the government of Lima has like given her a bunch of operations and stuff like that to separate her legs. And she just had one, like, I don't know how this works, but like she just had one tube coming out.
What do you mean one tube coming out?
It was like, she essentially had like a cloaca.
Oh, I get it. Oh,
all the stuff came out of. Which is, you know, probably why she's still alive, because usually they're born just like without butts, essentially.
Well, that's horrible.
Yeah, it's horrifying. But I imagine that probably if it is like, I mean, obviously it's not common, but if it's that common, like it must have.
It could contribute to the lore.
Ancient folks definitely saw that and were probably super freaked out by it.
The Peruvian one just celebrated her 6th birthday, apparently. Aww.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. Actually, it's fun. Like, what was that called?
It's called Sirenomelia.
Because I was thinking, because this is a trivia. For those trivia people out there, the Starbucks logo is not actually a mermaid. It's a Melusine. It's like a mermaid with two tails, essentially. And I don't remember what exactly the space that occupies in mythology. I have to look that up again. But it's like, yeah, it's like that's why she like is holding like the two tails.
Gotcha.
And that's why it's not a mermaid. It's a Melusine. So I said they heard the Mel, and I was like, oh, I know that. Why do you think historically people are obsessed with mermaids? Or why they're so prevalent in many, many cultures?
I don't know. So there is also, I guess the last little bit is, you know, there's obviously, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's dugong, I think.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Sounds Scottish.
Which they are, many sailors thought that was a mermaid. Dugong. It's essentially, it's like a manatee, but like kind of more svelte. And I guess they are located in like some parts of all around like Australia and the Philippines. And
I mean, if you've been like up for however many hours of the day, like, or the week, and you've been drinking and working hard, and you've been like, you're kind of slightly impaired, I could see how people are like, oh, I saw a mermaid.
Well, it's interesting, too, that there are, like, mermaids in Harry Potter as well, because Vila... Because I feel like, Melusines are, like, again, they're, like, river or ocean spirits or whatever. They're basically, like, river, sea creatures with two tails. Mermaids, one tail. Vila, sirens, Lorelei, those are all creatures that sing and sort of lure you away from whatever you're doing to possibly seduce you or to your death. Like, they're all, like, it's just interesting that we would have both Vila and mer people in this. And then I feel like there should have been, maybe this is ignorant of me, but like there could have been some sort of cool connection that maybe Fleur could have thought about, because isn't her, because her grandmother is part Vila, because Vila are technically like water based in some way, right?
In Russia,
Vila, really? Because in Russia, like, Vesalka and Vila are, like, especially, I mean, I guess Vesalka more so than Vila, but they're, like, water sprites and creatures that will try and,
The story I read, or the myth, the Wikipedia page I read about Vila said most of the Serbian ones are, there are some that are water spirits, but most of them are land-based, because they have that little, like, circle of stones or whatever people come across.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, because in Russia, they, like, in the Selka will, like, are, like, water, essentially, like, water mermaids who appear beautiful and lure you in the water to drown you. And then they're ugly and scary. Yeah.
They're not, the mermaids in throughout, are they're definitely all, like, a lot of times it's, like, they foretold storms and stuff like that, but other times they're, like, cure diseases or give you some sort of boon of some kind. So they're kind of... They're definitely more, it's definitely more mixed bag.
They're your panacea creature. They do all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's awesome. That's super cool,
it was people. Pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that'd be something that's pretty interesting to look into more, just learning about different cultures and why they thought that.
Thanks for informing us about mermaids and the Great Lake.
Hey, no problem.
I didn't learn anything about Huron. Wah, wah.
Oh.
Bye.
For joining us for You're a Wizard, Harry. Our editor is Alan Matthews, our artwork was done by Jesse Carlton, and our music was done by Sean Fagan. I know you want to help us out,
So why don't you head on over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review? And also, send us an email so we can talk to you. You can do that by emailing us at potterpod@geeklyinc.com. Hey, I know you all want to keep talking to us, so find us on Twitter at PotterPod.
I'm Michael, and you can find me at 13Nerd.
I'm Sarah, and you can find me at Her Lady Tompkins.
And I'm Vijaya, and you can find me at Ethnic Ninja.
Sorry, I just found a 10-pack of hot sauce that I'm trying to add to my wish list. Sarah, is your bookshelf color-coded?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
This is yellow.
All right, I'm stopping and exporting.